Welcome to Day Zero Update for January 29th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we got a big week of news. A bunch of stuff has happened. The Xbox and Bethesda Developer Direct happened.
Giving us
a glimpse of like what to expect at least over the next 5 months or so. For games that they are putting out and one that they decided not to give a date for some reason. But we got a number of games being announced, given dates and such. A delay here. There's an anniversary stream happening in a couple days for a publisher that might be pretty interesting. And then we got some bad business news. Certain person is resigning from their studio that they founded. For obvious reasons. And more bad Blizzard news. Particularly the Blizzard side of the company instead of the Activision side. For a few reasons. We'll get to that later. But before we do, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here with Hitman World of Assassination. Got its big freelancer mode updates, as well as a name change in the process that gives everybody that owns Hitman 3 the maps from Hitman 1 and 2, so that for the freelancer mode, they can all experience the mode to its fullest extent. And freelancer mode is essentially kind of a roguelike version of Hitman, where you go into your home base or whatever your lair of contracts, where you pick amongst 8 different contracts, and it escalates with each, I guess they kind of call them campaigns, essentially, going against one of 8 syndicates. And the first one is 3 missions, so you generally want to pick like 3 maps you're going to be pretty confident in yourself being able to do. And each mission, it'll tell you, like, hey, here's how many targets, how many, there are sometimes safes that you have to look around for, notes or, you know, something to give yourself information for how to hack it and open it to get the contents. I've only done it once, and it was a coin they call Merces coin, M-E-R-C-E-S. That is a form of currency in the game. You also just have straight money that you get for finishing each of the missions. And what else? There are sometimes merchants in them that will sell you guns and such that you can't get in the map. The other one is a, I guess, like a chest you'll find in the map that have, you know, 3 random items that you can collect to use in your mission or not use and sort of keep in your collection of weapons in your lair kind of things. And it seems like the choices for targets are pretty random. Said they're secrets, you know, syndicate members. But it might be, you know, people that are not the main targets that those maps would normally have. So I played a good bit of this through the first set of campaign stuff. So 3 missions, and then it escalates to 4, then 5, then 6 for getting through the whole thing, which gets to be tougher as, you know, taking on 6 maps. You can play them in any order. It just, you may have the numbers change up, and maybe the it gives you some side objectives to do. One of the missions I had that was particularly tough was taking place in Bangkok. That is the hotel, the two-sided hotel, that one of my objectives was not getting into combat, so basically not getting noticed enough that raised people to just start shooting at you. One of my other ones was no bodies found, which I was doing pretty well until I ran into a point where one of my targets was on the top of one side, where the ability to get up there is very restricted. The last objective I had was use only one costume for that mission. And that was definitely the point where It was kind of a no-win scenario in this sense. Mm. There's not one costume that can let you get around that much freedom that's easily accessible at this point. I could have maybe figured it out just by going in that area and eventually killing the right person that would let me get up to that top part. But that was not to be. I ended up just killing a bunch of people because that was an easy way to thin out the security, which mostly worked. It was fun to be just killing people, running away, and letting people discover, oh, there's a dead body and what's going on. I don't know. This just keeps happening. Maybe we should stop, you know, recording this album. Because people keep dying around here. But no, they just kept going. I ended up killing that. And the other guy was just hanging out in the out front in the hotel that was just also surrounded by a bunch of people. And that was an unfortunate place to have it as well. And that's kind of the challenge of the whole mode, is it's not the main targets that you see in these stages. So it adds a lot more challenge and really test your skills as a hitman of sorts in this game. And that's definitely the big challenge. I think I was playing through the first three. One of them was Colorado, which is a very tough map that is very compact and dense with people. Luckily, one of my targets was hanging on the outside, but I couldn't find good enough cover to take them out. I think one of my objectives there was to use a dart gun, a poison dart gun, that I never used before to take out a target. But ended up, you know, having a dart gun shooting at somebody that was in sight of somebody else. That ended my run there. Luckily, if you die on a regular stage, you get, you know, a second chance to continue on. But obviously, if you that was my second one of three, so I had to get down and pay attention for the last one, which the final missions are like showdown missions, they call them, I think, where essentially you are just giving, you don't know exactly who your target is. Specifically, it'll highlight like four, might change depending on the map or how far you get in. I think I'm on the second tier on the final mission. I think it says it would be six potential targets. It just gives you a bunch of like clues of like, oh, they have, my first one was, they have red hair, they have a hat on, they have glasses, they have a tattoo. They like to read books and eat sweets. And so you're like tailing these people, trying to figure out like what they're doing. They do have the ability to spot you in any outfits, I believe. So you have to be very careful. And yeah, I eventually followed around enough. I was like, I'm pretty sure this one is the one, and managed to like use a coin to trick them down a hallway that nobody was in. And that one, I had a challenge for a special kill with a melee weapon for like a rare or higher weapon, which I managed to find a sword in a part of the map. So I took that and stabbed him in the back. basically like threw the back into the torso, you know, out the front kind of thing, and just ran away and got to an escape spot. That was fun. Yeah, it's a really cool mode. It does a lot of fun stuff. Every time you have a successful mission, you come back, it'll give you a free of your secondary items, you know, like your rubber ducky grenades and poison pills and explosives, that kind of stuff. And so you have a limit for how much you can bring in. It starts off at like 5 points, and like a basic pistol's 3 points. In your lair at all times is a garrote wire. That's a stethoscope that you can use as that. That is 2 points. And so I opted kind of most of the time to not bring anything in unless I knew where I could go to get certain things. But they do enough of a job to really fuck with your expectations of what's in the map. So I got one in Sapienza for using explosive to blow open a safe. And I knew in that map there's an explosive golf ball in the apartment that they give you access to. And so I went up there, eventually found my way up there, and it's not there. So it's like, oh shit, I should have maybe brought an explosive device with me, that kind of thing. So I ended up not bothering with the safe and just taking out the target. And so, yeah, the objectives are tough. They're there to put extra challenge on you and, you know, make you actually learn how to be an effective hitman in this game. Using your stealth, your costumes, your ability to direct attention around, all that kind of stuff to great effect. And a lot of people are finding out they're not very good at the game, that they, you know, can manipulate things just for the set targets that, you know, that set themselves up in obvious ways. But what about these random NPCs that maybe just be out in crowds that are, how are you going to deal with that as a challenge? And a lot of people are finding out, like, oh, they're, when it's not all set up for them, when they're not these, you know, story missions you can do that will set you up for taking out somebody or, mm-hmm. you know, put you in a good position to do that stuff, that maybe they aren't as good as they think they are. Mm. And so that's kind of the other fun point. And yeah, for completing missions, you get XP as you level up. It'll open up other parts of the lair. I leveled up enough to get open up the outfit room that lets me change into any of the other outfits I have unlocked. So that's cool. Doesn't really change too much for things, because those are not going to be really effective tools for killing some of these people, but they're good enough for the start. But I also had these points where I could put up posters, and they're very much those kind of sassy, ironic posters that are, you know, referencing things you do as a hitman. Like, oh, don't lose your head. Mm. You know, very kind of dark humor things. It's a bunch of those on each of them. So I have two of those up. Still looking to put more time and unlock the other stuff. But I believe if you fail, they have alert missions, which is where everybody's on higher edge. And if you fail those missions, you end your campaign. I believe start over from scratch, from the first set of syndicates, missions, whatever, the three set. So definitely going to be a challenging thing, but I'm looking forward to put more time into that. Gives a fresh new life to the games and new ways to play these maps. So that's an awesome thing. Let's see, the other game I've been playing, Haiku the Robot. This is a Metroid-like that came out last year, indie game, that is a two-man project. One dev did all the programming and sort of game design stuff, and had another guy that worked on all the audio and soundtrack stuff. Looks really nice. They describe it as like a Game Boy style. I don't think it's necessarily that level of graphical style. It's more advanced, but it's each of the areas has kind of a bit of a monochromatic style to it. And you'll notice just in the backgrounds will be, you know, orange in this area, very shades of orange and, you know, black kind of thing. And you'll know when you're in sort of thematically different areas. I've seen like a blue area that it has a lot of water stuff, and as a robot, that is a bad area. You fall into the water, you die kind of thing. But this game is very much in the Hollow Knight mode of Metroid-likes, but not as harsh as that. For the most part, it does get a little bit harsh in that the save points are fairly spread out. And, you know, it has a lot of points that you can just drop into pits that, you know, don't have an end, that kind of thing. You do lose a chunk of your health for that, but much like Hollow Knight, you can kind of refill your health whenever you want. It does take time and makes you vulnerable if you're in an area with other enemies. But the game does a good job of keeping enemies from respawning just because you left and entered a room, you know, re-entered the room. It gives a little bit of timeout. So if you're doing some puzzly stuff, I've been in an area where there's, you see two like hallways on top of each other that have levers in them. That one opens the door to the other room, and then that one has a lever that opens the door in the previous room. kind of thing, and being able to take out the enemies once and hop back and forth without having to fight enemies again is nice. It does have a little bit of map obscuring to it, where you get two sections of the map where you just don't have it, and that's in the canon for the world. There's a machine that's preventing that. So if you're in the particular area where that's at, you'll see like a pulsing thing happening. And you'll just follow that to the area where that thing is at. You can break it, and then next time you look at the map, it'll fill in that area for you. Yeah. At least the places you've been. But you don't have to like go buy stuff from a map maker and then pins and such to fill out the map. Though you do kind of get some stuff like that, but it's just for you talk to people and one person will put on map, you know, map pins for all the save points, that kind of stuff. Any other thing is that it has a very kind of similar combat system to it for the way it's doing stuff. I've got the wall jump right now. I'm working on the third boss, I think. This was the first game since I got my Steam Deck that doesn't have cloud support, because I wanted to play it on... I streamed it on my PC and then wanted to play on my Steam Deck, and so I had to start over in that sense. That was unfortunate. So that was a little annoying, but now I kind of know what I'm doing, so I don't have to waste time, you know, looking in places that are not going to be all that helpful. But yeah, it does a good job with that stuff. You get a little bit of story of, you know, things are going wrong here with the various robots, and there are other ones you'll meet that are, there's like a detective that's also trying to figure out what's going on here that's causing issues, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you're working your way around to see what this like corruption that's going on. It seems like there is, the bosses are machines that have been taken over by this corruption. And then as you kill it, you know, it flies away to go mess things up elsewhere. So yeah, it's one of those, it has a nice style to it and all that. Very good game. Looking forward to put some more time into that. Let's see. Also been playing Persona 3 Portable. I finished the first part of the Tartarus dungeons, beating the final boss there. Playing this after having played, you know, 4 and 5, it's definitely easy to see like where those games improved upon this formula. Because it's a bit bare bones. Like you don't have the weakness and strength information thing that fills in as you use those different spells. You have to ask, I forget what her name is, Mitsuru, I think, that is sort of your overseer in the Tartarus. You have to ask her to analyze that enemy, and then if you don't kill them before she can do it, she will tell you, like, here's what their strengths and weaknesses are. Kind of thing. That's how you fill that out versus in Persona 4 and 5. It just fills it in as you go. So you can try that stuff out a little bit more. So a lot of the enemies I've been facing in this first section already figured out that stuff. I think one or two I haven't, and that's because I can literally wipe them out in one turn before she can do anything. And so that's a sign that, like, you don't really need to know it, because they are just super weak. But yeah, it's still a good battle system. Obviously, they've improved things so that you can have full control of all your party members versus having characters be AI controlled. That was definitely an issue for some people back in the day. But yeah, this is a pretty straight PSP port. There's not too much that is changed really with this game. Even still has the same kind of blocky character models and such that were in there for the PSP version. And even so, like, seeing things like when you get to the point of having to pick a sports club, I was like looking up, like, what are the characters for each of these teams? And it's like, no, it's the same one for all of them. You get the one social link for taking any of them. And it's like, well, that definitely changes in Persona 4 and 5. Where you're like, well, I don't want to be with the assholes in this club. So which one of these is the better one? But here it's just like, it doesn't matter. they're all the same people. And also you get one for like a random guy at the school that I'm like, why the fuck do I care about this person?
Mm-hmm.
Kenji, which is like a weird thing, but still a good game. Still that got a lot of good stuff there. The only really walkthrough things I've been using is just for quiz stuff. Because I don't really want to bother trying to figure out, you know, things that are probably easier to know if you were, you know, schooled in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are specific to their culture. So that's the one issue with it. But for the most part, it's pretty nice. It has a lot of, you know, bonus things. You can pop out of the dungeons much more easily to save your progress, especially at certain points. And so, yeah, it's a very fun game. Still looking forward to putting more time into that as well. Because I forget when I dropped off last time I tried to play. Maybe when I got to the kid. I think that was maybe around where I ended up not coming back to it. Not for any reason, just being busy with stuff. The last game I'm playing, Super Stardust Portable. This was on one of the PlayStation Plus premium games for the classics back in, I think, like October, September last year, pretty early on. Initially, it was only like PS5 only version and didn't have any trophy support. But recently, they kind of fixed all that, added trophy support, and released it as a full PS5, PS4 version as well. That was free if you owned it originally. So I officially purchased it for free as cross-buy, so that was fun. This is a version of Super Stardust HD on the PS3. The big issue is that being a PSP game, not having dual analog sticks, they've mapped out all that stuff to the face buttons. So you don't necessarily have free aim of your weapons. It's sort of an 8-direction thing based on you know, how many face buttons you're holding down. You can hold 2 to do diagonals, that kind of thing. If you hold down all of them for the gold melter, which is the big laser that melts the gold asteroids, it'll do a spin around you, because that was one of the tactics you could use for that one, to give you a bit of a defensive armor, essentially, for some of the enemies, or when you had a bunch of gold asteroid pieces flying around. That kind of thing that lets you do that. And yeah, been enjoying earning those trophies. It's a lot of the same stuff that was in the PS3 version originally, since it's basically the same game. You know, one's for beating each of the worlds in arcade mode and getting various other things throughout. So nothing too difficult, but yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that and get some mostly easy achievements, but. That's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, I played and I finished Xenoblade Chronicles 3 earlier this week. And yeah, it was an amazing game pretty much all the way through. I will say, you know, again, if you are the type of person who does not like cutscenes in their games, you're probably not going to like this one, because it is just, it's got a bunch of cutscenes in them. Some of which last about half an hour. But the good thing is, it's a damn good game, and the story it's telling is just really good. And it's got probably one of my favorite final boss fights in just all of gaming. It's incredibly just psychedelic, and it's like a marathon where you have to fight this guy in like 5 different forms. And then it opens up and there's like this huge epic battle that's happening around you while you're fighting this guy. And you end up calling in like a bunch of the friends and teammates that, you know, temporary people that you've teamed up with for the final battle. It's just, it's amazing. And it ends just on a perfect note. It also just kind of sets itself up for what may or may not be the next game in the Xeno series. I'm not even sure if they're going to keep with the Xenoblade name. They might move on to something else at this point. But so since that was done and I needed to fill the RPG hole that was in my heart at that point, I decided to take advantage of Game Pass and start playing Persona 3 and 4, both Persona 3 Portable and 4.
So you're filling your whole both at the same time.
Yeah. Persona 3 Portable, of course, is the PSP version of the game, which means that unlike the game you would have played back in the old days, this one, they basically turned a big chunk of it into a visual novel, which is, you know, fine, because, you know, it's still Persona 3, but not quite as much of, you know, the walking around and stuff you might be used to. But it's still, you know, Persona 3 and all the stuff that you love it for, but really I've mostly been playing Persona 4 Golden, which, you know, I have not played Persona 4 in a long time, not since, you know, it was on the PS2. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, was I going to be able to remember any of this game when I started it up? And then Nanaka shows up with her dad and I'm like, oh God, yeah, I remember all of it. But it is, I will say, I forgot how long it takes for that game to really get started. I mean, and Persona 5 is kind of like that too, but it actually gets into the action pretty quickly. Not Persona 4. Persona 4 takes its time sort of setting up the whole, you know, place, you know, like this is what Inaba is like. This is all the people who live here. This is where you're going to school. This is where you're going to live. These are the people you're going to school with. These are the people you're living with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I only started doing like the first actual dungeon last night. And yeah, it's about as, you know, fun and challenging as I remember it being. I will say one of the big differences here is that considering it's obviously a improvement over the original, all the models definitely look better, but they also kind of have like that Cupid doll sheen on all of their models. So you can definitely tell that this was a sort of a semi remaster of an old PS2 game. But everything else is still just a lot of fun. And yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing. So Dandria, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it's not been much different from last week. I finally finished A Space for the Unbound yesterday. I talked about it last week. Like, this game was developed by Mojiken Studio. They're known for shorter, but at the same time, more out there games as far as story. Like, a few weeks ago, I finished, what's it called? The name escapes me. Like, Somewhere Was Still There or something like that. It was When the Past Was Around, sorry. And that game was about, like, this woman who lost her love, which was an owl, but it was pretty funny. It was a point and click game. So A Space for the Unbound is a side scrolling puzzler where the gameplay loop is really like very Animal Crossing ish. You're just going around different parts of the map, finding items to really move the story forward. And this game is a lot longer than every game that this studio has created. Like, it took me around 8 hours. There's 5 chapters and then a really, really short prologue. And yeah, it's a pretty captivating story. And what really sets this one apart is it really shows like the differences in like culture and what to expect in a place like Indonesia. At the end of the day, you are using this high school student who is helping this little girl try to finish her story, and then at the same time he's caught in this like sort of anachronism where he ends up traveling through time and learns like the truth about certain characters around him. But at the end of the day, like, you're pretty much like this girl's boyfriend, and then this girl has all these powers, and the more she uses her powers, the more she gets hurt, and then you try to just figure out things in relating to the story through that. But what really sets this game apart is the fact that every chapter feels like some sort of other game. So as I explained, like, for the most part, it's a side scroller where you just do favors and stuff, but then the puzzles, get pretty out there. Like in the second chapter, you have to find evidence and then all of a sudden bring them to court and like just find contradictions and testimony, which is, you know, that's Phoenix Wright. And then there's a lot of like funny, dialogue to go along with that. And then the following chapter, you have to all of a sudden get in these random battles with people like in that world, and the battle system is pretty much like similar to what you'd see in a fighting game, because you have to put in certain button commands, but then it's also turn-based, and you defend yourself by using sort of a golf timing mechanism. So seeing like all of these gameplay nuances like melded into one is definitely a fun experience, and at the same time you're also getting a lot of the polish that you wouldn't expect when a game melds genres the way that this one does. So it kind of reminds me of It Takes Two in that regard, obviously, except for the fact that. But yeah, really fun one. I played it on Switch, so it's definitely it's not going to be a game I platinum, but it's the game is available on every platform, and I totally recommend it if you had the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
I've also still been playing Fire Emblem Engage. Mm-hmm. I'm not too far in it because the game is pretty hard. If you were a fan of like the older games back on Game Boy Advance, that's the level of difficulty you should expect. Like as much as I enjoyed Fire Emblem Three Houses, in my opinion, it definitely was the easiest one in the series, and I think mm-hmm. that's part of what made it so playable in the first place. Like, yeah, you have the three quests, but at the same time, since they were like as quote unquote easy as they were, it just made it more possible to go ahead and put time to it. This one. Yeah, it's about as challenging as the old ones were, with the main exception being the fact that you still have that time stone. So if you made a mistake and someone dies, you can go ahead and rewind if you fix whatever you did wrong. But at the same time, it's like, okay, cool, I'm going to go ahead and fix my problem here. And then you see someone else die and I'm playing on permadeath, you know, eventually like that eats up at you. So I'm like, I'm wondering if I'm at a point where I want to go ahead and just lower the game's difficulty. But I don't know. I'm a prideful person and we'll see how I get with that. My brother, in the meantime, he's been playing as well, and he's been doing nothing but skirmishes, which are just like events and like gameplay chapters to do that have nothing to do with the story. They're just a way to grind. But the risk there is that you can die there too. So, you know, it's a matter of just really picking your poison as far as like what you're doing. But as far as the story, I wouldn't say it's much to write home about. It's probably one of the worst Fire Emblem stories in the wild.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Yeah. Like it's still solid in the fact where, like, you know, you're seeing the characters actually talk to each other versus in the older games you're just seeing like blocks of text, and like it gets pretty boring. But other than that, like the Fire Emblem loop is just as familiar as it's ever been. I'm just like not sure if I'm into really the point where they're really trying to push the story or the characters. Like, so far, I haven't grown attached to any certain character in the game yet. And at the same time, in between every battle you finish, you have the opportunity to free roam and talk to everybody and like find items there. And it just doesn't seem essential. You can talk to characters that you use to like kill others, and they give you this item that you can use to upgrade them later. But other than that, I don't really feel much of a reason to go ahead and do this. In fact, when I think about it, that was probably the weak point in Fire Emblem Three Houses too. I actually was not a fan of running around it, even though like it was something that I welcomed. This one just seemed forced. It doesn't really feel necessary at all. Like I would rather just go through the menus, but I don't know. That's just me. Aside from that, like I still think the game is worth the money. It's a good Fire Emblem experience, and I'm having fun. But you know, it's not going to be the story that keeps you in. It's going to be the fact that, you know, if you love the Fire Emblem combat, this is, you know, this is up there with the best. So yeah, there's that. And then lastly, last night I started Hi-Fi Rush, which was shadow dropped a few days ago after the Xbox Developer Direct, and I am having a whole lot of fun with this game. Developed by Tango Gameworks. The last one they did was
The Evil Within. Well, no, they did The Evil Within, and then they did, I think it was Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yeah, Ghostwire Tokyo. And Ghostwire Tokyo, like, I thought was solid. I never finished it just because, like, I didn't really think the combat gameplay, like, was all that fun. And then the world around it, like, it made it seem like an open world, but it really wasn't because a lot of the stuff was locked. And, like, I eventually fell out of favor with it. And then The Evil Within is, you know, first person, somewhat scary and that sort of stuff. And Hi-Fi Rush is nothing like those at all. The game is just a crazy load of like both music and like awesome animation, that's reminiscent of like sort of some anime with some elite beat agents built in. And I'm not just saying that for the music, like the game just has that cel shaded, like comic-y look that just looks awesome. And it's definitely in my wheelhouse. The gameplay itself is pretty darn solid. You know, it's a third person action game, very much in the vein of a Platinum Games kind of title, except that the combat doesn't feel all that fast because it's actually rhythm based. Everything is by the beat. If you continue to, you know, fight by the beat, you get more points, you do more damage, that sort of thing. Every sort of section has a grade where if you the better you do, the more points you get, which you can go ahead and use to have better equips and things like that. And yeah, it's a whole lot of fun. There's a whole lot of attitude here, and I'm looking forward to getting back into it. My main gripe is that the levels seem a little long. The first level, which is really just an introduction, took me almost an hour to finish, and I didn't die. So that just shows like how much fluff there can be in each level. And then the platforming doesn't feel all that great either, just because like it feels like there's too much gravity going on. But you know, that's eventually something you get used to, and I'd rather have that than the game be too floaty. So yeah, I'm really having fun with that, and I'm looking forward to getting back into it. That's about it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news here. And Microsoft has finally announced their next wave of Game Pass games, kind of out of the typical pattern they've had for the past couple of years, where they typically announce one at the beginning of the month and one in the middle of the month. This one's coming in here last week of the month. In the wake of the Developer Direct. So, yeah, obviously Hi-Fi Rush is one of those games. Seems like a pretty solid beat-em-up, rhythm-based beat-em-up. Let's see. Yeah, GoldenEye 007, that's our next story here, is out on Game Pass as of now. No online play for the Xbox version. But I believe the controls are a bit more reasonable than what I've seen people posting lists of way to make the Switch version play like a, you know, a normal first person shooter. So there's that. RoboQuest is out on the 30th for game preview on the console. I guess it's already out on PC Game Pass. This is, let's see, blast way through hordes of evil bots in procedurally generated environments and solo or two-player co-op. So that sounds very shootery. I don't know, maybe a little Left 4 Dead. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily say too much here, but there you go for that. On the 31st, Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition hits the Xbox console. So that is the sort of remastered and upgraded version of Age of Empires 2. So I guess they've probably gotten it playing pretty well with the controller. So there you go for that. Also on the 31st, Inculinati hits game preview for console and PC on Game Pass. That is the strategy game, but based on an art style, it's ink-based medieval manuscript style. So that's a neat looking game. Let's see, also coming January 31st, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R, the remaster of the PS3 fighting game, coming to console and PC. So there you go for that. Darkest Dungeon for console and PC, February 2nd. That is a very good but very tough roguelike turn-based RPG that's all about the psychological effects of fighting on your team. And you have to deal with that and ways to cure the various ills they gain or, you know, get rid of them for new people that have not been scarred so much. So there you go for that. Let's see, Hot Wheels Unleashed Game of the Year Edition, console and PC, February 7th. So that is the Hot Wheels Unleashed, the fairly popular sort of kart racing game with Hot Wheels vehicles and all that. Very much in the classic kind of, you know, small vehicles and big room kind of thing. So that's neat. And that's pretty much it here. For the next couple of weeks. So that is that. Yeah, just checking to see what else is on here. Nothing really. So there you go. And yeah, as I said, GoldenEye 007 is finally out now. It was announced a couple days ahead of time that it's coming out. And yeah, Switch is the only version that has the online play, and that's because their Nintendo Switch Online app supports that stuff. And I believe it's only with two people. So kind of leaves a little bit to be desired there. But yeah, you're not really getting perfect versions or ideal versions of either of the game on either system. Mm-hmm. The Xbox seems like it's the most solid with an improved frame rates and 4K support and all that and achievements. So yeah, there you go. A way to play that game if you have those services. And I believe also it's on Rare Replay. If you have that, you get that as a free update. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the ways that you can kind of access that. Next. Go ahead.
Yeah. GoldenEye is a game that like I never really had much nostalgia for, but you know, for those who have the opportunity to enjoy it, good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never played it. I was more interested in the Aki wrestling games.
Mm-hmm.
On N64 is my multiplayer game of choice. So yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was like Mario Party and stuff. And, yeah, as much as I love those Aki wrestling games, those are probably not going to come.
No. But, yeah, what is available now is NBA All-World, the new game from Niantic.
Mm-hmm.
That very much looks like a lot of Pokemon Go stuff. As far as, like, walking around your world and, like, collecting NBA players, I guess. It seems like you encounter players and, like, take them on in challenges or whatever to recruit them to your team. Mm. And I guess you can face other players with your team. It's a bit of a weird idea for this stuff. And also, I guess you get a bunch of gear and apparel to outfit them in, that kind of stuff. So kind of a lot of the same stuff that Pokemon Go does, though the collecting of Pokemon's a lot more simple than this sounds. But if you're into NBA stuff and dealing with all that, that's a neat thing to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And probably do better than a Harry Potter game.
Yeah.
Yeah, this release is one that is a little close to home. I actually interviewed for a job with Niantic for this particular game. Didn't work out, but yeah, good luck to them. It's just, it's really weird. I mean, like, you read about all these previews that are happening for, like, you know, the beta that was out a few weeks ago, as well as, like, the release now. I haven't played the game yet, but, like, when I try to read about it, I still don't. I mean, I hope it works out, but as far as it being more successful than Harry Potter, I don't know if that'll be possible, but we'll see.
I mean, that Harry Potter game did not do very well at all.
No, it did not.
Absolutely. Like, the Harry Potter game made sense. This one doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, but this is fitting into the NBA culture kind of thing that people like, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Another kind of like fantasy basketball kind of thing to it as well. To counter, I guess, NBA 2K's thing with their trading cards. They have the screenshots they have here of like the overworld stuff. Looks very similar to Pokemon Go. I assume it's using a lot of the same kind of tech for that. But yeah. There you go. That's the thing. It's on iOS and Android. You can check it out now. Let's see. Happening here on the 30th, tomorrow. They are and Nippon Ichi Software. Not their American branch, but their Japanese branch is holding an event at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, to announce a bunch of new games, new merchandise, and giveaway stuff. Be interesting to see what they end up announcing here for their 30th anniversary. Because they are in the process of like re-releasing a bunch of games, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know what big stuff they have to announce. They're just in kind of an interesting place. So yeah. That'll be something interesting to see. If there is anything interesting, we'll talk about it next week then. But yeah, there you go for that. For stuff to come here, The Pathless is coming to Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Switch on February 2nd. So more people can check that out. So that is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the most recent game from Giant Squid.
Mm-hmm.
Developers that came from that game company, making Journey.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very cool kind of open world-ish exploration game. Maybe like a inspired by Breath of the Wild, but taken to its own style.
Mm-hmm.
Of combat and all that. So yeah, definitely one people should check out if you have not had a chance to play it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of those games that definitely is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also happening here, coming out February 6th, Yggdra Union, We'll Never Fight Alone is coming to PC as an early access game for at least a few months. This is a Sting game.
Yeah.
They had their like little weird universe of these like I think three games they released around this time frame back in 2000.
The Department Heaven series. Yeah.
That's this was one of them, published by Atlus, but I believe that those publishing rights have reverted back to Sting because they released a version for Switch a few years ago that was Japanese only, along with iOS and Android versions that were also Japanese only.
Yeah.
This release is going to be worldwide, English, Japanese, Korean, and traditional Chinese language support. Yeah. So I assume if this does well, they'll release it elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this one. For those who don't know, the Department Heaven series is probably, I think, like if anybody has ever experienced it at all, the one game they've probably experienced was they were a kind of sort of obscure little cult game that came out for the DS back in the day called Knights in the Nightmare. And basically, like, the actual games, like, tend to, like, change genre, shift genre a little bit, but a lot of them tend to have, you know, the whole simulation RPG aspect to them. The thing about Yggdra Union is that it's famous for sort of being, like, it starts off with, like, a kind of cliche sort of, you know, sort of this type of strategy RPG type story, and then it ends up having like this really dark sort of deconstructed narrative about it, a lot of moral ambiguity and stuff like that, and it's just it's one of those games I've actually been wanting to play for a long time, and I'm glad they're finally making like an actual English version of it that's going to be readily accessible.
Yeah, the last time it was released in the West was on the PSP back in 2008.
Yeah.
Which is a good version, just not everybody has a PSP still.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's also like a prequel to this called Blaze Union. It's also pretty good. And it's also like directly linked to and pretty much gets like ends just where this particular, where Yggdra Union basically starts. It's pretty damn good. I'm legitimately happy that they're finally, you know, making this more widely available and people can finally enjoy this series for themselves.
Yeah, they're adding a bunch of stuff to this rewind function, autosave, conversation log, item hints to extra contents. Let's see, battle speed adjustment function, sound set function, stuff like that. Addition of free save, so you can save whenever, seemingly even during battles.
Mm-hmm.
Infinite use of items in easy mode. You can remove equipment more easily.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. More compatibility with mouse, keyboard, and controller stuff. Adjusting layout of the keyboard buttons. So, yeah, seems like they're doing a lot of work to make this a good version, probably a base to bring to other platforms if it does well enough. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Yeah, one of the bigger PlayStation VR 2 launch titles, the Dark Pictures Switchback, has been delayed to March 16th. Seems like they needed a little bit more time to get it finished in time. So that is a little disappointing, but also it probably helps them out a little bit because the launch window, the launch week especially, is looking pretty stacked at this point with games. I think the count right now for games coming out around that time is up to about 40 as more and more games are getting finished and getting ready for launch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's building up. These guys probably benefit a little bit from being a few weeks afterwards and getting the wave of people that have, you know, enjoyed what they can out of the launch and then waiting for more for this game that's going to fuck people up.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there you go for that. Yeah, WWE finally announced WWE 2K23
mm-hmm.
For all the PlayStations, Xboxes, and PC. It'll be out March 17th with John Cena being the cover athlete and like the featured wrestler for their like story career stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll go through his career, which doesn't have a lot of huge changes in it. And he started off as like a kind of just a general normie wrestler and then got the gimmick to be a rapper for a while. Then, which is where the spinner belt happens and then became the default belt for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of became John Cena, the guy that people love to hate on because he didn't have necessarily the best wrestling skills or whatever. I don't know. It was a whole thing.
Roman Reigns?
No, John Cena.
Oh, okay. John Cena. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, it's really just a matter of his rise to prominence so soon. Like, yeah, he has a limited moveset, but I think it's the fact that he was the face of the business so fast, and it just seems like he would never put anyone over, similar to Hulk Hogan. But yeah, now you can't compare those two anymore, so I won't say anything there.
Yeah. He's a much better person.
Yeah.
Especially doing a lot of the Make-A-Wish stuff. He's the person that's done the most of those. I think it's over 600 at this point for various kids out there.
Mm.
Though I believe he does have some weird personal life stuff that has led to him getting divorced with whichever Bella twin he was with.
Oh, they never got married in the first place.
Yeah, I think they were engaged, maybe. They broke it up.
They were engaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think it was some weird thing about kids or whatever, and he didn't want kids, I think it was.
Yeah.
For very particular reasons, I think. Mm-hmm. But whatever. They also had a lot of fun together, like made videos of them being basically naked.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of weird shit. But yeah, that's... That should be a fun career to go through,
mm-hmm.
Especially because people really like his like rapper era.
Oh yeah,
yeah, the Thuganomics gimmick he had. But yeah, like this is definitely a good move for 2K23. The brand pretty much redid itself last year when they had Rey Mysterio on the cover, and yeah, like Chris said, like going through John Cena's entire career through the various highlights that they'll do in 2K23 will definitely be fun. I'm looking forward to see if they've actually made any advancements with the gameplay mechanics, because they definitely turned it around last year. But I still think there's some stuff to tweak in order to make it really accessible. And I mean, like, accessible just from a playability and, like, you know, ease of use standpoint. But aside from that, like, yeah, it's definitely a good move. I'm looking for. Yeah, hopefully that AEW game comes out sometime.
Yeah. I think it's looking to be, like, a summer release, something like that. At this point, yeah, it looks like Bad Bunny is a pre-order bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's one of the celebrity people they've had on that was surprisingly good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a way that people weren't expecting.
Ever since they had Stephen Amell, who plays Green Arrow, a few years back, you know, he was followed up by Bad Bunny, who you just mentioned. And then now they also have Logan Paul, who, you know, love to hate Logan Paul, but he has done a hell of a lot of great stuff in the ring, including last night in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. I think they've hinted at him being in the game.
Mm.
But yeah, Cody Rhodes will be in two wrestling games this year,
mm-hmm.
WWE and AEW. Though Yeah, there's somebody I follow on Twitch that loves to do like CPU matches in 2K22. Mm. And he's pretty sure as soon as that this game comes out, there will be somebody that'll make the bruised Cody Rhodes. Mm. That giant fucking bruise he had when he tore his pec.
Mm-hmm.
And wrestled like way too soon after that. So yeah, there you go. WWE 2K23. Hopefully improve on things.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Let's see here. Curse of the Sea Rats is out April 6th mm-hmm. for everything. This yeah. is a Retroidvania game because the main characters are
rats.
These four prisoners of the British Empire transformed into rats by the notorious yep. pirate witch Flora Byrne.
Yep.
And so to regain their human bodies, they will have to fight many dangerous bosses, uncover the secrets of the vast Irish coast, and ultimately capture the witch who cursed them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can probably guess that these developers are very Irish.
Oh, yeah.
If they are making a game about the English Empire.
Yeah.
The British Empire.
I'm also going to guess they're probably furries as well, if I'm looking at any of these character designs accurately.
Maybe. I don't know.
Whatever. It looks like a good game, though, either way.
Yeah. Though the rats you're looking at are bosses.
Ah.
I guess it's also partially a, hey, here's a bunch of the bosses.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, in the trailer, the animation style looks really good.
Oh, yeah.
Looks pretty well done. So this is an indie game to keep an eye out for in April. If you are interested in that. So there you go for that. Mm-hmm. Also coming out in April, Cook Serve Forever.
Mm-hmm.
This is the latest of the Cook Serve Delicious series, potentially being the last one, the fourth title.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this one looks to keep the sort of chaos going as you're, I forget if you're traveling in this one. You're going through the bustling solar punk city of Helianthus. So the third game went to a post-apocalyptic America where you ran a traveling food truck that had to like fight off like the mob or whatever as you're driving around.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of weird stuff while you're also doing cooking stuff. So this one looks to sort of continue a lot of that kind of silliness to it, mm-hmm. but with a lot of new things to cook and all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go for that stuff. Another one of those. It'll be in early access in mm-hmm. April. A demo's out now. I'll probably do a video for that here in the next few days when I get a chance. So that's cool. Let's see. Next one here. Yeah, that SteamWorld event happened, and the thing they announced was SteamWorld Build. This is coming to all the PlayStations, Xboxes, Switch, and PC. It is a city builder coming out sometime this year. They didn't put a date on it or anything, but they do have a Steam demo out now. I checked out that demo, streamed it earlier this week, and really liked it. I am a person that likes the idea of city builders, but have not really played much of any of them because you know, stuff like SimCity and City Skylines are very bogged down in the details, you know, zoning and paying attention to, you know, the water shelf and making sure you're pumping your sewage out to the right place, you know, not doing any of that upriver of the water you're pulling in from for your city, all that kind of stuff, a lot of detail-oriented stuff that requires a lot of work, and I never really get far enough in those games to enjoy that stuff. But this is more of a very basic city builder. You are setting up a mining town outside of, at least in the demo, there may be other areas you can go to at some point. Yeah. But you're basically starting up in a mining town outside of, next to some train tracks, a train station, and there's an abandoned mine shaft. So you're sort of laying down the road stuff and having, you know, machines to start a mill and sort of farming out wood and farming out these different materials And then once you get to the point of opening up the mine shaft, you go down into the mine shaft and kind of build out this whole thing that looks is kind of like a manager version of the way that like SteamWorld Dig works, where you know you're a robot going down to the mines to mine stuff, that then you go up and sell it to buy, you know, upgrades and such. You're kind of doing a lot of similar stuff like that here. But, you know, underground, you're laying down this flooring that sets up, you know, places for engineers to work, prospectors, and I forget what, like a mechanics, so that they can dig out this area. And then you're getting those materials, sending them up to the surface so that you can turn them into other things, you know, more buildings that you can build, and turning that stuff into equipment that you can use elsewhere, all that kind of stuff. It has a good like cadence of moving, you know, above ground to take care of things and going back down to deal with that stuff. I think at a certain point you'll get enemies showing up, that kind of stuff. But the demo that took me about an hour and a half to beat doesn't really get to that point. You basically find some big ancient thing that, you know, once you fully dealt with it, it ends right there. So yeah, it has a good cadence to it. And like in the city builder part on the surface, you know, you're not really like managing zoning or anything. You just have to have the buildings that the people in your like residential houses have them just close enough so they, you know, get their needs met, kind of thing. But that's not really too big of a problem. You even get the option to move buildings around freely, no real penalties for that stuff if you build things poorly. So yeah, I think it's a pretty fun game, especially for people that like the idea of city builders but don't want to get into all the nitty-gritty stuff that like SimCity and City Skylines revels in, that a lot of people like in those things to be as realistic as possible. This game likes to not have to make you worry about that stuff too much, which makes for a pretty fun time. So yeah, there you go. That's a cool game. That'll be out sometime this year, but the demo's out now on Steam for people to check out. Now let's get to our business bullshit of the week. Justin Roiland has had a bad week here.
Oh, yes, he has.
As he has been forced out of the Rick and Morty show stuff there from Adult Swim, as well as Hulu's pushed him out of the shows he was working on there. So that's mainly in response to domestic abuse charges, as well as other stuff that has popped up on social media implying that he has been DMing underage girls to talk about sex and stuff with them. All the sort of creepy shit that no adult should be doing. And then it came around that he voluntarily resigned from Squanch Games, the studio he founded, that worked on High on Life most recently. Which I imagine that's partly, you know, paying him off to get the fuck out. So yeah, that's good news, especially for people that, you know, had been playing High on Life, heard all this going on, and especially I think Kotaku had an article that was like, oh yeah, Squanch Games had their own like sexual harassment issues, not from Justin Roiland himself, I don't think, but sort of seemed to suggest that they had that kind of culture to themselves back in like 2018, and then they settled with the worker that filed the complaint, kind of thing, and not really seemed to imply that they hadn't really done a ton to make a big culture change there. So yeah, didn't look super great for Squanch Games, so getting him out of there hopefully helps show that they are more serious about, you know, having people that are respectful of their fellow employees, hopefully on the up and up as people. So yeah, good news for the rest of the people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. And he can go fuck off with all his money
mm-hmm.
for a long time. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we even have to be talking about something like this again and, like, so frequently. Like, you know, yeah, I get it. Like, allegations are allegations, you know, innocent until proven guilty, all that garbage. But at the end of the day, like, you know, these allegations don't come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like, you know, obviously I don't know Roiland personally, but a lot of the people that he's worked with in the past have had, like, these issues. So to say that this is surprising or it would not be true at all. But at the same time, like, it's not that hard to not be a shitty person. I'm not saying be a saint. I'm not saying be someone that'll win the Nobel Prize. I'm just saying don't be shitty. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not that hard. You don't got to be talking to underage people about sex. You don't got to be, you know, just doing all this, like, dumb stuff. And, like, let's say, yeah, like, let's go ahead and say, like, he gets away innocent. At the same time, like, you know, Rick and Morty is a very famous, like, IP all over the world. Squanch Games makes some solid games. Like, you know, I have fun with Tyon. And, like, when you have something like this, it dirties your studio. So, like, whether you do this kind of stuff or not, you're making everybody you work with look bad when they probably didn't even do anything. Mm. And, like, that just sucks. Like, that's selfish. And, like, yeah, it's some good news that these guys can go ahead and work without him, but it sucks that they had to deal with it in the first place. They didn't have to. You know? So I feel for that regard. But, yeah, at the end of the day, like, they have jobs. It just makes you wonder, like, you know, whether they should just make something new entirely. Like, okay, let's Phil Spencer just make them a new one. I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah.
Mm.
Seems like the sort of guy that has gotten away with things for a long time. So finally getting some sort of consequences is good. Even though he won't really suffer that much, though, depending on what these charges entail for him legally. But yeah, there you go. Now onto Blizzard. This first one here involves Blizzard having a, let me see how they call it, rank stacking or stack ranking process for evaluating employees, where they are required to rank them on a bell curve, and that requires managers to give low ratings to a certain percentage of staff. That I guess they've been able to kind of get away with not really following it for the first couple of years, but apparently having to be forced to go with this more recently. A manager at Blizzard, I think on the World of Warcraft team, was very much not happy to have to do this, where they, managers are expected to give a poor developing status to roughly 5% of employees on their teams, which would lower their profit sharing bonus money and could hamper them from receiving raises or promotions in the near future. And it's like the idea that you have to give that label to 5% of your workforce, even if they're all doing a great job, is just a really shitty thing to have to do to people. And I've definitely, I don't know if what I was dealing with was stack ranking or not. It was sort of a employee review where they rated people on a number of categories, I think 1 to 5. But they were like, but we don't give out fives because, you know, people can always get better. And it's like, well, that's fucking stupid as hell, especially when it came to, like, one of the categories was attendance. So it's like, if I'm here every day, don't call off, don't do any of that, but I only get a 4 out of 5. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm supposed to be a superhero then? That kind of thing. It's that kind of stuff that leads to people just getting these dumb ratings that is intended to make them feel like shit and feel like less of a good employee that they actually are. It's the sort of thing that just shouldn't be done, like forcing ratings on to people that don't actually deserve them. is just classic, like, capitalism bullshit. It means to, like, encourage people, like, oh, you can do better. It's like, yeah, of course they can. Everybody can do better, but, you know, there is a limit to how much you can do better before you start being like, well, now you need to start crunching to get better. You know, put more effort in. That kind of way where, you know, these people don't get paid to work that extra mile of the work. You know, they're going to get the paid the same way either way. Mm. And, you know, people are going to do what's best for themselves versus what's best for the company, especially when you're working at a place like Blizzard. After all the allegations and such come out, that I'm sure that affected the way people worked even then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Brian Birmingham, a co-lead developer on World of Warcraft Classic, got very mad that he was being forced to do this, that he emailed staff last week to express his frustration with the system. Mm. When team leads asked why we had to do this, World of Warcraft directors explained that while they did not agree, the reasons given by executive leadership were that it was important to squeeze the bottommost performers as a way to make sure everybody continues to grow. Mm-hmm. This sort of policy encourages competition between employees, sabotage of one another's work, desire for people to find low-performing teams that they can be the best-performing worker on, and ultimately erodes trust and destroys creativity. He goes on to say he can't work under a system like this, which he and other managers who were asked to keep it a secret had managed to circumvent or skip for the last few years, mm-hmm. but which had recently begun to become enforced. He reportedly told staff he'd be leaving the company if the policy was not reversed, but shortly after the email was sent, he was called into HR and terminated as a result. So he gets to at least enjoy not having to deal with that bullshit anymore.
Yep.
Unfortunately, he had to leave a job that he probably liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, that's good news for him, because that'll be somebody else's gain.
Mm-hmm.
To hire him for their team and be better for it.
Yep.
At Activision Blizzard's loss. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Once again, we must repeat, the momentum is on the side of labor right now, and you can either get with it or you can get out of the way.
And speaking of that, Blizzard Boston's developers were in the middle of doing a union drive.
Mm-hmm.
The team that was formerly named Proletariat.
Yeah. Boy, isn't this ironic?
Yeah. Apparently,
would you say it's really thematically accurate?
The studio's CEO did not like this at all, treating workers' organizing efforts as a personal betrayal. And holding a series of meetings to undermine them,
mm-hmm.
So much so that they ended up pulling its petition for a union election,
mm-hmm.
To call him out on his bullshit, mm-hmm. Saying the spokesperson for the Communication Workers of America Union,
mm-hmm.
CWA, has withdrawn its request for a representation election at Activision Blizzard's Proletariat Studio. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Proletariat CEO Seth Sivak chose to follow Activision Blizzard's lead and responded to the workers' desire to form a union with confrontational tactics. Like many founders, he took the workers' concerns as a personal attack and held a series of meetings that demoralized and disempowered the group, mm-hmm. making a free and fair election impossible.
Mm.
A spokesperson for Activision Blizzard called these allegations false and said Sivak was simply defending his employer's rights to express their opinions on unionization in an anonymous vote. Which is like, yeah, that seems like a very Activision Blizzard thing.
See, this is one of those things that I freaking hate. You know, they take it personal because they keep trying to convince themselves that the company is like a family. No, the company is not a family. You're the employer, they're the employees. That's it.
Yeah, and that the...
You can try and pretty it up all you want, but at the end of the day, that's where it all comes down to.
Yeah. And that's even for him as the head of the studio, he's only a smaller cog in the bigger cog of Activision Blizzard.
Yeah.
And so like this unionization is not necessarily a commentary on him, but more about the heads of Activision Blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he doesn't get. But he's a CEO, the leader there. So he doesn't get to be in that union. So may also be jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
As a CEO, he's probably making more than any of the people there. So, yeah. Also there. So, yeah. I guess a number of people spoke out as well, tweeting about it from within Proletariat. Let's see, someone here. Damon, management is accused of misinformation. As noted above, in all four of the optional meetings, there was no anti-union propaganda. Oh, this guy is, let's see, I don't know what he's, this is art director, laid out his version of events. The long thread is, leadership sought to inform the studio's employees on topics that nobody was familiar with prior to the union position. These vigorous, their vigorous debates within the BU. Many employees in the BU explicitly did not want to unionize. There are many who, despite their stance on unions, didn't like CWA's adversarial communication tactics, public attacked workers, and the studio's reputation. So that guy's definitely anti-union. So yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, definitely the whole point of union drive is to let the workers figure it out. And not to interfere in obvious ways that you are trying to tear down the union, which Activision Blizzard has been failing at with a number of their unions, but this one seems to be the first one that was successfully torn down. So hopefully with a little bit of a break, they can figure out everything without, you know, him getting involved and figure out what they really want. So yeah, Blizzard's having a great time right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for your Bethesda bullshit news. But let's end here talking about the Developer Direct. They had a handful of games here. Yeah, one surprise release, but they start off with Minecraft Legends. Showing off more of that, which seems all right. It's basically an action RTS, essentially, where you play a character who sort of gathers units to join you to fight the enemies as PvP mode, as a campaign mode, full of that stuff. You can have PvPs, two teams of up to four players each work together to collect resources, build a base, and lay siege to their opposition's forces. It seems all right. It'll be out April 18th on everything. Xbox, PlayStation, Steam, and Switch. It'll also be on Game Pass as well. So you can check that out. Let's see. They had the Elder Scrolls Online Necrom expansion, which is the next expansion. It'll be out June 5th on PC. June 20th on PlayStation and Xbox. That returns to Morrowind. So there the chapter introduces fans' most requested feature, a new playable class, the Arcanist. Brings new abilities, mechanics, and marks the third new class introduced since the game launch. So that's cool. For more of that. Yeah, and they also updated the game so that the base version includes all past chapters. It makes all past DLC available to any players with the ESO base game, including those playing through Game Pass, and I assume PlayStation Plus Extra, I think it is in there. So yeah, they also held a global reveal event after the Developer Direct, so there's a whole other video you can watch that has more information on that if you want to, so that's worth checking out. Yeah, and then they showed Hi-Fi Rush, the new game from Tango Gameworks. It is in a rhythm action game. Pretty solid. So that's on Game Pass now for console and PC. Then they showed Forza Motorsports. Showed how pretty it looks, which it definitely looks pretty. This is the only game here that did not get a date. Despite this whole event being about games coming out in the next few months. So apparently this will be out like in the second half of the year.
Out of all these games, the one game that you thought would have a date is the only one that didn't have one. So I don't know.
Yeah, apparently they still have more to go. And it makes sense with what they showed, because all they showed was visual stuff. They did not show any like real gameplay of, you know, what the new career mode is going to be like or online racing stuff, any of that. It was just all about the fidelity and realism and all that. Though people are starting to pick apart that stuff and try to figure out, like, are these actual new models or are they models that have been in, you know, the last several games that are just upgraded? Because they kept saying, you know, built from the ground up for this new generation. It's like, well, how new is all this stuff? You know, that kind of thing. So I don't know. But people are definitely digging into that. And then they ended on Redfall, which will be out May 2nd for Xbox Series X and S and PC. And I believe this is their first $70 game for this year. Though I assume for the most part will also be $70 and Starfield in that. But yeah, they showed off a decent chunk of, I think, single player gameplay for this. That very much confirmed for me that this is not something I want to play because it's very much like a vampire horror game. Going around the city of Redfall, taking out vampires that's, you know, lurking around in many places. Oftentimes, probably mostly at night, I guess, since it's a vampire thing. So, and they also have like a, let's see, they got the various pre-order bonuses, the Bite Back Edition, their special edition, which adds a hero pass for future additions to your character roster, outfits, weapons, and more. So they'll be adding more content after launch. Yeah, it seemed almost like their vampire version of what's the zombie game they put out? Let's see. I forget what it's called, what their zombie game is, the Microsoft one. It's like that, very much. But with vampires, you know, finding vampire nests and all this and fighting big bad vampire bosses, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Seems neat for the people that are into this kind of stuff, but yeah, definitely isn't doing it for me so much. But yeah. I'm assuming that's going to be your thing, Brandon.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Seems like the multiplayer will make it a bit of a different thing, since you're not going at it alone. Have up to three other people playing with you. State of Decay, that's the zombie thing. Yeah, there you go. Redfall, end of the developer direct. Seemed pretty all right for that stuff, but not a ton here that like jumped out at me. I played like 5 minutes of Hi-Fi Rush. I need to get back to it. Just started it up. The only issue I really had is I think you push one of the sticks to bring up like a beat meter, and it kept minimizing it whenever it went into cutscenes when I got back out. I was like annoyed by that, but it took a little break, and I'll check it out this week when I got some time. That seems like the one standout game here. Mostly because it stylistically is very different from everything else that's in here.
Yep.
Redfall is very much like some of the other stuff Arkane has worked on. Forza Motorsport is Forza Motorsport. Elder Scrolls Online is all that. The only thing that was missing from that presentation is workers screaming throughout the guy talking about it in the background. The Minecraft Legends, like another Minecraft spinoff. Maybe cool, I don't know, for the right audience. But Hi-Fi Rush stood out as something different than they've been putting out for a while for that studio.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was talking about it a lot. You really love to see studios do something that you wouldn't expect them to. And making it even more unexpected was the fact that it shadow dropped. I know it's been rumored for the past couple of weeks, but the fact that no one knew what it was really helped. And like, yeah, like I said, having a lot of fun so far. I know you only played for like 5 minutes, Chris. You got to give it more time than that to really even get to the first level. But yeah, overall, like, I thought the presentation was pretty solid. I think this is the format that they want to be doing moving forward. Obviously, like, this one is a little different than the rest, but I thought it was a good one. And the fact that we got a lot of definitely we can start just plotting dates for what to expect for the Xbox. Yeah, looking forward to what's ahead.
Yeah, more dates here than I think they had all of last year. I think that was just, Pentiment, I forget what else they had, like one or two other games at all last year. Nothing that really was big for them. So, yeah, there you go. That is it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Dan for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news as we hit a new month, February, where things aren't really slowing down for game releases. So yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out, as well as select strangers. Then we'll wish you a good new year. So thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.